This is the Countdown to Mickey podcast, where we take a new look and deep dive into the things we love at Walt Disney World and Disneyland. This is Michelle.
And this is Steve.
And this is the Countdown to Mickey podcast. Because of the pandemic, we've decided to postpone our next Disney trip for a year. We are typically annual pass holders and go quite a few times a year, so this was a huge change for us.
To help us get over our Disney depression, we decided to do a countdown of our favorite rides and really dive deep into our favorite attractions.
Welcome back to this week's podcast on Countdown to Mickey. Today, we are going over number 41, which is
Winnie the Pooh, or the many adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Disney says you travel through 100-acre wood in an oversized honey pot and get lost in the pages of A.A. Milne's classic tales. It's any height, all ages, and it's based off a 1968 Disney short, Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day. Of course, Winnie the Pooh originated much earlier than that from A.A. Milne.
Well, let's start first of all. What is going to be the main focus of our discussion today? Are we focusing on the Disney World version as our number 41 on our list? Or is it the Disneyland version?
Well, my favorite is the Disney World version. Is that your favorite as well?
Yes. I mean, I don't think they're very different when it comes to the actual ride. But I think Disney World gets the leg up because of the interactive queue.
Yeah. So actually, it was going to be made at Disneyland first. They were going to add it to Fantasyland, but they just really didn't have the space. So then they were thinking Mickey's Toontown, but again, they ended up putting Roger Rabbit there. So it actually was built in Disney World first. It opened in June 4th, 1999, and was a big hit. They had to close Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, though, to make room for this one. Apparently, it was so controversial, they even had fans picketing in the park to save Mr. Toad.
I'm surprised Mr. Toad has such a huge following. They had
I know, I don't even like Mr. Toad.
I guess they called it, they had ride-ins or they had mass, everyone went and queued up in the line to show how popular it was. And I mean, I guess Disneyland technically could have gotten rid of Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, but they decided to keep it.
Yeah, that's because the Disneyland buildings were a lot smaller and older, and it would have taken a lot more money to refurbish it. So they actually ultimately picked a Country Bear Jamboree in Critter Country, and the Country Bear Jamboree wasn't getting the number of people. But actually, of course, there was a riot when Disneyland closed that as well.
Right. I think, yeah, there's always going to be someone who's upset with a ride closing and not happy when it opens.
But it's kind of cool. They do have nods to the previous attraction. So at Disney World, there's a picture inside Al's house where Mr. Toad is handing over the deed to his house to Al. And at Disneyland, there's a tribute to the Country Bear Jamboree. There's the trophy heads of Max the Buck, Buff the Buffalo, and Melvin the Moose. You can see them if you look up and backward while leaving the Huffalump and Woozle room.
Yeah, and I think both the decisions at Disney World and Disneyland in terms of where they put Winnie the Pooh, I thought they were the right moves in terms of theming. I mean, I think, again, I've only been to Disney World when Winnie the Pooh was there. I just think it fits in really well across from Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. I don't know what it would be like to have Mr. Toad's Wild Ride there. It seems like it's kind of, I guess it would go in theming-wise.
Yeah, because it was still Fantasyland.
Right, but in terms of Disneyland theming, I think that's the perfect place for Winnie the Pooh, right next to Splash Mountain. It's kind of in the Critter Country area, so it's like already wooded. It already feels like there should be bears back there. And so I think theming-wise, I thought it's the right choice for both cases.
Yeah, I like locations for both. And as you pointed out, it's our favorite spot to do ride or switch. So Splash Mountain, we have a 7- and a 9-year-old, and we have a 2-year-old. So Splash Mountain is the perfect place to take the 2-year-old when the older ones are doing Splash Mountain, ride or switch. He gets to ride it twice. Again, at Disney World, we usually use it as a ride or switch when we're doing Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and take the youngin over to see Winnie the Pooh. And usually, though, we could put a fin in a couple rides at Disneyland, whereas Disney World is probably just one. And that is because Disney World version is so much more popular than the Disneyland version. Disneyland, I'm surprised if I ever see waits more than 5 to 10 minutes.
Right. I think there every now and then I've seen like 20-minute lines for the Disneyland version, but like you said, that's kind of rare and only on pretty crowded days.
Yeah. In Disney World, when I was looking at the wait times on Touring, so Touring Plans is a website that can tell you all the waits, the predicted waits, and the average waits for each ride. And even on like the least crowded day, Winnie the Pooh has like a 20 to 30 minute wait. There's always a much longer wait for that one. Actually, the Winnie the Pooh ride in Tokyo is supposed to have the longest wait for any Winnie the Pooh ride. So Winnie the Pooh is in 4 out of the 6 parks, and Tokyo is the only one that's a trackless ride system. That's one of the newest, and that one has the biggest waits. And Disneyland is the lowest waits out of all the parks.
And you got to watch some of the video from Tokyo, Japan, in those trackless system. And again, many people may not know what that means, especially people who haven't been on the new Star Wars Rise of the Resistance ride. And so can you explain what trackless systems mean?
So there's not a track that it has to follow. There's a computer that can kind of change the routes. It looks like you kind of get 2 different views. There's 2 different honeypots. Kind of like in Rise of the Resistance, there's 2 different cars and you kind of go through the ride together and you guys kind of go back and forth. You can go backwards. Really, any way the computer wants to program it, they can go. So it just can make it so each ride is a little bit different.
Yeah, and we're going to get into the technology behind that a lot more when we get to Rise of the Resistance, since neither of us have been to Tokyo and actually ridden that ride, so we're not going to talk too much about
it
today.
Too much about it,
But
yeah.
I thought that would be something to just quickly mention, because that is a really cool technology. But back to these rides, I think I would be interested in talking a little bit about the refurbishment, because this is one of the newer rides at Disneyland and Disney World that just went through kind of a new refurbishment. And I saw something in terms of the cost. And again, I think this just shows
you. Are you talking about the queue or the actual ride refurbishment?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, the queue. And yeah, so the report that I'm looking at right now says that I think this is for Disneyland, but again, I just wanted to talk about the relative scale of these projects.
Mm-hmm.
And it was said that the budget for the attraction of the new Winnie the Pooh in Disneyland cost $30 million.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Tokyo was $130 million.
Right. And so just to put that into context at how expensive these rides are.
That was the original cost of making the Disneyland one.
Right, right. So just to refurbish a ride, $30 million. That's not like ongoing maintenance.
No, that's not refurbishment. That's just the initial cost.
Right. When I say refurbishment, I mean switching over from the old attraction to the new attraction. Yeah. But yeah, so recreating this whole new attraction is $30 million. And so I think I often forget just how expensive it is to run an amusement park. And I think during times like COVID, we realize like this is a pretty huge chunk of money that
they're losing every day.
And so like a lot of people think that Disney and these parks just basically continuously make money. But again, I think it just puts into context how tough of a time this is for the parks and for Disney as a whole.
Do you know how much the interactive queue cost? So in 2010, Walt Disney World developed a whole new interactive queue as you're waiting to get on Winnie the Pooh. And this is my favorite part of the Winnie the Pooh attraction.
And I'm assuming the Disney World version costs a lot more because they have that interactive queue. And so I don't have any numbers off the top of my head.
Yeah, in 2010, they built it, and there's a couple different areas. There's Rabbit's Garden, where you can do a hide-and-seek game with gophers. They kind of jump up, and there's a crawl-through tunnel. There's a honey wall, where you can draw shapes with overflowing honey by running your hand against the wall. And then if you rub it really fast, you can see the pictures underneath. There's hidden pictures. And then there's Piglet's house. You can knock on the front door and hear Piglet inside. And then Eeyore's gloomy place. And you can crawl through Eeyore's leaning home. However, you can look up videos. When they initially designed it, there was a Tigger area. And there was these little circles where you could go. Actually, it opened, but they never let anybody go on it and basically closed it. Probably the lawyers took that away. So there was these little circles, and they looked like Tigger, and they dropped down 6 inches and would bounce you up. And of course, it was only for little kids, but literally they only like let a few families go on it, and it was pretty much shut down right away. Now, please, Steve, tell us about the honey wall. How did they do this? I'm kind of sad. This is probably going to be one of the demise secondary to COVID, that we will not be able to do the interactive cues as much, at least until it's over.
Yeah, first of all, I don't think they're going to shut down the interactive queues. I think they're just going to have a lot more.
They already did.
Oh, they did?
You can't go to the interactive queue, Winnie the Pooh, because everybody's touching it. Even if they put a hand sanitizer before and after, that would be like the absolute worst place to catch COVID.
True. Okay, fair enough. So that is very sad. I thought they might find a way to keep it going. But again, like with the rest of the interactive queue, it's pretty straightforward in terms of like the Rabbit's Garden. You push buttons, certain things happen, you spin wheels, and you can pop up the balls. And so a lot of those are mechanical kind of devices that allow the kids to have fun. But the honey wall, I think, is a very cool piece of technology that a lot of us take for granted in terms of being able to have multiple people touching one touch screen at the same time.
Does that work? Like when like your phone, if you touch two things at once, does it work or no?
So with newer phones, yes. So okay. You probably remember the original iPhones where like if you accidentally touched in two places, it kind of freaked out and didn't know what to do. And so now it's called multi-touch technology. Now you can pinch, you can, like there's different... Basically,
as I do that on my phone, right, while we talk.
there's different, I guess, sensors that there's different programs that allow the screen to basically identify different styles of touching. And so this multi-touch technology has now made it into cell phones. But again, I think it's a really cool technology.
Did they have that in cell phones in 2010? So if this interactive cue came out in 2010, was this technology available in cell phones? Do you know when it came around?
Yes, I believe it was. Off the top of my head, I don't know the exact year, but I'm just thinking back to 10 years ago. I believe they did have the beginnings of multi-touch technology. But again, not on as grand of a scale. So your phone can handle multi-touch technology in terms of two fingers back in 2010. This screen was able to, like, there can be 10 kids touching the screen at the same time, and it'll pick up all 10 of those touches on the screen, and you'll be able to manipulate the honey based on all of those people touching the screen at the same time. And so that, to me, again, is very cool. And you think about electronics, how this works, it's just fascinating to me how we've been able to use something as simple as electrons and how they flow through circuits to do such amazing things, like create this honey screen that many kids can touch at the same time and manipulate at the same time and get that feedback loop so that the touches, like you said, if you touch it super fast, you can see the picture behind it. And that feedback loop that goes from the touch to the output of the screen, I think is just really, really cool. Do you have any idea like how this is all working in terms of the touch screen?
No.
So again, please stop me if I'm getting too deep, but again, these devices basically act as capacitors. So again, please continue to ask what these things are.
Capacitors, explain that to me.
So a capacitor is a certain type of electric device, a certain type of a component in a circuit that basically can store a charge. And so the most basic capacitors, if you remember those disposable cameras where you held a button and you kind of heard it charge up, and then the flash worked. Yeah. So that's your basic capacitor, where basically you have a battery and the disposable camera. You push the button, the charge from the battery flows into the capacitor, it charges it up, and then as soon as you take the picture, all of that charge is released from the capacitor into the light bulb, which creates the flash of the mm-hmm. camera. And so that's your basic capacitor. What it does, it stores a charge until you release it. That's basically what's working in this multi-touch screen, is that there's basically a whole grid of capacitors on the screen. And every time you touch the screen, since your finger actually has electrons in it, it actually takes the electrons from your finger and stores it into the capacitor on the screen. And that's how they know, oh, somebody is touching in this location on the screen. And then it adjusts the screen based on that charge that is basically in that capacitor at that point. And so, again, if you were to take a very tiny finger and press it on the honey wall, you wouldn't see that. Like, it wouldn't be as skinny as a tiny finger clearing away the honey. It's going to be as thick as the...
Oh, I never paid attention to that. Yeah. Like, our two-year-old versus our...
Versus us.
Yeah.
Right. And so...
Fingers.
So, yeah. So, it's going to be... The trail of the honey is going to be as thick as the grid of capacitors that they put on to the screen. And so, again, this multi-touch technology is using those capacitors. And so, again, it's called capacitive sensing. That's kind of the technology that is in your phones and that is used on this screen. And so it makes use of capacitive materials to hold that charge whenever it's touched by a user. That's just one of the cool technologies that we often take for granted in our phones, but that's what makes the honey wall so interactive and so special.
It's great. What about anything else about the ride? I didn't even look into the technology of the ride. I just, all I cared about was the interactive queue.
Well, I mean, I think there's some different technologies on the ride. But before we get into the ride, I want to talk a little bit more about what it means to be a capacitive panel that can hold a charge and how that's all related. Because I think, again, this is something that I read about. I think, I don't know, you know Joe Rogan, he has the podcast.
Yeah.
So he had this amazing skit back, and this must have been 10 or 15 years ago. He was doing a stand-up skit where he's basically like, if I put you in a forest with a hatchet, how long would it take you to send an email?
What?
So he's just saying, like, we are, overall, humans are dumb. We just use things that smart people have created. Like, if, when we talk about this honey wall, I guarantee if you stand next to the honey wall and you ask people, hey, how does this work?
I don't know.
95% would have no idea how that honey wall works. That's what Joe Rogan...
I think that makes us stupid.
Well, like, that's what Joe Rogan is saying in his stand-up. He's basically saying, like, we take so much of this for granted. If all of it went away, how many people could actually get back to where we are today? And so that's just something to think about. Because, again, I think it enhances all of the rides at Disneyland if you stop and you take a second and you say, well, how does this work? How does a capacitor work? Who made these capacitors? What type of material are they made out of? Like, what is this capacitive sensing? How many capacitors are in the screen? How much of a charge is held? If there's a charge on my finger, like, what's the magnitude of that charge? What can I do to potentially collect a charge and shock somebody? That happens all the time when it's winter time and you have these static shocks that you get whenever you touch a doorknob or anything like that. And so I think all of those type of questions we need to ask more of.
Yeah.
And we need to, like, stop our kids. Like, so often in that interactive queue, it's just like, okay, we have a little break. Like, our kids are having fun.
Right.
Let's just stop and breathe, where it could be like, oh, well, how does that work? Like, why do these bees that are going along that little metal thing, like, how come they fall down at a faster rate on the steeper version versus the more horizontal version? Like, there's so many cool things you could talk about in terms of the vectors of gravity, going back to the honey wall, like the magnitude of electric charge on your fingers. Like, there's so many cool things that we could talk about that we just don't. And so that's,
yeah,
to bring it back to Joe Rogan, like, that's what happens so much of our lives, is we just coast through the line.
Well, I was just coasting through.
We coast through the ride and we don't.
I wasn't even thinking about capacitors.
Right. And we don't.
Or how that works.
Right. And we don't think about how things work. And so, again, I just want to challenge our audience and parents and kids.
Us the next time we go to Disney World.
Right, to ask that question. And what I try to do with our boys is I try to ask why or how does that work at least three times. And so when you say, well, how does that work? They say, well, you touch it and it moves the honey. Okay, well, tell me, how does it work? When you touch it, how does it move the honey? And then they say, well, I don't know. And then say, okay, well, there's this capacitor. And say, well, how does the capacitor work? And so the more you dig in, and you always ask why or how at least three times, and that actually gets you down to some of the fundamental concepts of how the universe works, the physics principles that guide some of these amazing inventions. And so...
Is that your teaching...
The teaching philosophy, yes.
Philosophy?
Yes.
Again, why three times?
Try to ask why three times and try to spurn or kind of build this curiosity because, again, it's capacitive sensing is an amazing, amazing invention that a lot of us take for granted every time we touch our phone. And every time we zoom in with two fingers, there's, again, this amazing screen. There's all these amazing electronics that's happening behind the scenes. We can manipulate very, very tiny magnitudes of the electromagnetic force, very tiny charges to create cool things like the honey wall. And I hope that we don't take it for granted.
Wow. Yeah, we've learned quite a bit from Winnie the Pooh already today.
Yes. And if you are offended by what Joe Rogan said about us being stupid, then find a way to go from a hatchet in the woods to sending an email. And then once you can do that, then you know some of the technology.
I think I gotta do a little work first.
There we go. We can get there. But yeah, I think to go into the actual ride itself, there is a ton of really cool technology in the ride. It may seem simple. It is your kind of old school dark ride where you're in a car, whether it be a honeypot or a beehive.
Why do you think we rated it above some of the other dark rides?
The queue, I think, is one of the reasons, yeah. And I think it's just a really cool story as well. I think the reason I think you asked me before we started, why did they choose this particular Winnie the Pooh story? There's thousands of Winnie the Pooh stories. Why did they choose this one? I think the Imagineers were very intentional at choosing this particular story because of the way they could immerse the rider into the story. And so they have a story that has a lot of physical elements. They are able to put, like, you're bouncing along with Tigger. So they have, obviously, the ups and downs of the ride with Tigger. They're able to put wind, so the windy part.
And the rainstorm.
Right, the rainstorm. So you can, like, almost feel the rain with the sound vibrations. Again, obviously, the visuals of the rain. And then the dream. And so there's all of these very cool aspects that they can integrate, and you feel it in the ride, you hear it, and so that full immersion of the storytelling, I think that's why this ride is so special. It's because you actually feel like you're in 100 Acre Woods, you're right there along with Piglet, with Winnie the Pooh, with Tigger, you're dealing with the challenges of the storm, and then you're actually going into a dream, and yeah, I think it just feels like you're actually in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, so I think one of the very cool technologies in the ride, again, I don't know, for you, what stands out the most in the ride in terms of coolness?
Well, I like that it's not just that you're just going in the cart, but the cart kind of goes up and down and, you know, along with the music, it just is like a little bit more of a fun take on it.
Right. Yeah, and I think we also rate it high because of, like, we always ride this ride.
Yeah.
Because we're always doing the rider switch on either Splash Mountain or Seven Dwarfs. And so I think that's why it's also high. But
I think we also love the Winnie the Pooh characters. So I wanted to kind of dive into why do people like these characters?
Yeah, I mean.
And what have they taught us?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely read a lot of Winnie the Pooh growing up. I want to ask you, why do you love these characters? Because I think I like Tigger because he has so much energy. And
of course you do.
he's positive. And I mean, we have a dog that's very much like Eeyore. But I think, yeah, no, I think there's a character for everyone. I think they represent a little bit of all of us.
So I'm probably going to butcher his name, but A.L. Milne or... Yeah, I think it's Milne. So he actually went to Cambridge to study mathematics, but he decided to write a lot. and he was in one of the bloodiest battles of World War I. And after he returned, he had the impact of trauma and PTSD. And some people say that, you know, to try to get through this difficult part of his life and to connect with his son named Christopher Robin, that he made these children's stories. He actually wrote a ton of other stuff, but of course the children's stories were the most famous. And so he was using it as possibly a way to heal and connect with his child. So each of the characters kind of represent a different thing that he was dealing with. And there's actually been a ton of articles that connect different characters to different mental health disorders. So do you have any idea what Winnie the Pooh would be?
Winnie the Pooh is probably dementia.
Alzheimer's it's like disease? OCD, inattentive type, ADHD.
Well, I thought he like forgets where his honey is all the time, so that's why I said Alzheimer's.
He's obsessed with the honey.
Oh,
how about Piglet?
It. Piglet is definitely anxiety.
Yes, generalized anxiety disorder. And Eeyore?
Eeyore's depression.
Or dysthymic type of depression, yes. So just kind of, you know, everything's already negative and sad and slow. And Tigger, like you already alluded to, is hyperactivity. What about Rabbit?
Rabbit is probably, I'm going to guess, post-traumatic stress disorder.
No, he's narcissistic personality disorder. And Al, which I must have totally forgotten about, is dyslexic. So I think it's so cool that they were able to incorporate all these different characters. And I think it helps kids identify with, like, real personalities and, you know, the personalities they see with the adults. Not everybody's happy all the time. You know, we have some Tiggers and Eeyores and even some Piglets in the world. So, you know, we all have to accept and learn. And there's a lot of so many inspirational quotes. So the characters also were inspired by his son's toys, Christopher Robin, that are still on display at the New York Public Library.
Mm. Very cool.
So,
well, before we get into the quotes, mm-hmm. just to wrap up the ride a little bit. So the different stages, I think all of the Winnie the Pooh rides have like kind of the beginning stage where you're entering. The order is slightly different in all the rides. But again, some of that technology is just the immersion into the story. But there's one part that really stands out, and that's the dream. And I think in the dream, you are obviously in this kind of psychedelic state where they have these crazy colors, these mirrors everywhere. It's obviously supposed to be a little out of the norm, but there's one part of technology I think that is used in a lot of rides, but I think it stands out because of the dream, and that is the blacklight technology. So I wanted to talk a little bit about blacklight, how it works, and why it kind of makes the dream seem more like a dream. And so did you notice the blacklight or how it changes your perception of the room or
I think it makes the colors look more vibrant.
And do you know how that works or why it makes them
I'm getting well off the dark light is like a purplish hue, right? So it is reflected and then maybe the color combinations in our eye, I'm not sure.
Very, very close, but the blacklight is actually outside of our visual what we can visually see in terms of the wavelength of light. And so the typical color of light that we see, the visible spectrum, goes from red all the way to violet. And so we can only see those particular wavelengths, but there's two right on the outside of the visible spectrum. And again, when I say visible spectrum, I am referring to the electromagnetic spectrum. And so again, talking about technology, there's basically one force that is used in all of our technology, and that is the electromagnetic force. And so those same electrons that we talked about for the honey wall, like that's a part of the electromagnetic force. And the electromagnetic force also controls everything in the visible spectrum. So every single thing that our eyes are able to see is a part of the electromagnetic force or electromagnetic spectrum. Now, like I said, we could normally see just a very narrow band, but outside of the visible spectrum, there's infrared, which is heat that's mm-hmm. given off, which we can't see or sense. And then on the higher end, so the higher end of the spectrum, and when I say higher, I mean higher frequency, which means it's a shorter wavelength. That's the ultraviolet part of the electromagnetic spectrum. And so that's basically what black light technology is. Black light technology uses essentially that ultraviolet wavelength. And so it takes this high energy, I want to say radiation, but it's not that, it's not quite at the radiation level. It's just ultraviolet light.
Uh-huh.
And that high frequency essentially gets absorbed into certain materials. And so certain materials then reflect a very vibrant color that our eyes can see. So we can't see the ultraviolet. We can't actually see the black light. What we're seeing is we're seeing the ultraviolet radiation being absorbed into materials and then reflecting out.
Use like special paint, right?
Right. So there's certain materials that end up being fluorescent under black light. And so like white paper. So if you're wearing a white shirt, right, that is typically glowing this fluorescent blue under black light. So some other things, quinine, that actually glows blue-white under black light. Again, whiteners in your detergent. Some pens have fluorescent ink. So whenever you see like an invisible, quote-unquote invisible, basically they just use the ink that they can then shine a black light over to actually see the invisible ink.
Oh, cool.
Petroleum jelly, so Vaseline. So if you put Vaseline on your face, you'll glow.
Oh, really? Yeah. Let's do that next time we go on the ride.
You'll glow under black light. And then ripe bananas actually glow blue under the black light as well.
So which one do you think Disney uses?
So, I mean, I think they probably use the ink too. But they can manipulate the colors. And again, the black light just makes it seem that you have like a yellow and then this really fluorescent blue. So it just makes it feel like you're in this weird state.
Alternate
state.
Universe.
And so again, black light's everywhere. And it's, again, one of those things that you see black light and you're like, oh, cool, that's glowing. Like, well, what's actually happening?
Oh my gosh, you're making me feel really dumb.
It's not.
I've never thought about any of that stuff.
It's not to make you feel dumb. It's just to make you appreciate the universe. And again, I think in the our very first episode, I read that really long quote from Richard Feynman.
Uh-huh.
For those of you who haven't listened to our first episode, go back and listen to that quote, because Richard Feynman does an amazing job at showing how much more beautiful the universe can be once you actually know how it works.
Yeah. Well, it's really cool. Yeah, I didn't even know. But I am going to try the Vaseline trick and see if it works this time.
Here you go.
All right, so to wrap up the Winnie the Pooh ride, I wanted to go over some of my favorite Winnie the Pooh quotes. So, Steve, do you have any particular ones?
I do. He said, "It is more fun to talk with someone who doesn't use long, difficult words, but rather short, easy words like, 'What about lunch?'" And I think that, gets to the bigger picture of, like, it's so easy for people to sound smart to, like, use these really overtly complex words to make themselves sound and feel smarter, but they're not helping other people understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, as a teacher, I think that's one of my main goals is how can I make these complex topics seem accessible and seem a lot more simple than they are so that people can appreciate them and learn about them.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. Some of mine include Piglet said, "How do you spell love?" Winnie the Pooh says, "You don't spell it, you feel it."
That's a good one.
Winnie the Pooh also said, "A day without friend is like a pot without a single drop of honey left inside," which I thought was really cute. And he also said, "How lucky am I to have something that makes saying goodbye so hard?" And of course, my favorite, but are not that inspirational, are "Tut Tut, It Feels Like Rain" and "Oh Bother."
There you go. I think there's some other ones that I just found. "Think it over, think it under." I think I just like that idea of seeing things from different perspectives and thinking things through before you go rashly into them. Another one that I like here is, "When you are a bear of very little brain and you think of things, you find sometimes that a thing which seemed very thingish inside you is quite different when it gets out into the open and has other people looking at it." And that's just that idea of, Like, it may sound really good in your head, but you have to test your ideas. You have to get them out into the world. You have to get them tested. And so I think, again, he does a really good job of making those kind of ideas seem like they're coming from a child's story. Well, actually, they are coming from a child's story.
So, all right. So the trivia for last week, Steve, what is the Yeti's unofficial name?
George.
It's Harold.
Harold.
And what is the Yeti's unofficial girlfriend name at Expedition Everest?
Her name is Haroldina.
Betty.
Betty. Are they named after someone? Or
I don't know. You know, Ryan Reynolds just named his baby girl Betty.
After...
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it is based off the Yeti. And so to go on the quotes, the trivia for this week is, who in Winnie the Pooh said one of the most popular quotes? You are braver than you believe, stronger than you seem, and smarter than you think. But the most important thing is, even if we're apart, I'll always be with you. And that wraps up this week's episode. Thanks for hanging out.
Thank you for joining us. We hope all is well. Everyone is staying safe, staying healthy out there, and we are excited for you to join us next week.
As you wish.
As you wish. Thanks for listening. Please check us out at countdowntomickey.com, and you can follow us on socials. We're on Instagram under Countdown to Mickey. So thanks so much, and hopefully join us next time.